Well, hello. So good to see you. We're going to have some fun this morning. You okay with that? Sound good? My name is Nick. I'm one of the pastors. And if you're just now joining us, we're in a series called Rumble Strips. Y'all make your rumble strip impression. Ready? Go. Okay, just making sure you haven't forgot, right? And all throughout this series, we've been talking about how do we lay some healthy boundaries in the middle of some of the most important relationships. Our hope is that this has been a helpful series for you, because relationships can get kind of messy, right? So how do we have healthy boundaries? How do we put these rumble strips down? Well, today's message is called distracted driving. And I want us to have a conversation about having healthy boundaries in our life, particularly with technology, right? Because one of the interesting things is that our relationship with technology can actually influence, for better or for worse, the relationships that we have with one another. And this may sound like a strange topic to hear a sermon on. It was an interesting one to put together during the week. But I would argue, and I think most of you agree, it's a needed conversation. Don't you think? Right, a healthy conversation around having these healthy boundaries in our life with technology. And really, it's such an important thing because I mean, things are changing so fast. Right? Particularly when it comes to technology, like these leaps that we're seeing are getting bigger and bigger, and they're happening faster and faster. I mean, just a little perspective, right? 1927, how many remember that year? It's a good year. 1927, right? Charles Lindbergh flew the Spirit of St. Louis from New York to Paris. This is just a little over 90 years ago. Now we're talking realistically about trying to put people on Mars. I mean, just think about that. Think about how much has changed in less than 100 years, right? Or how many of you remember watching television in black and white? Raise your hands. Wow. Oh, it's interesting. 1966, it wasn't until the end of that year, until all primetime television was broadcast in color. Right now, you carry around a high-definition television in your pocket. Right? I mean, just think about how fast things are changing. I'm only 35 years old, but things have changed so much in my lifetime alone. We didn't have a computer in the house until I was a senior in high school. Like, I remember doing papers on an electric typewriter. Remember those? Like, kept it in the closet and, like, massive. You had to clear off the whole dining room table to put it down. And the worst thing was, like, if you made a mistake, right, and you had to pull out the whiteout, you know, like, white it out. And then you had to line the paper up perfectly to try to type over it. The word was usually like a little higher or lower than the rest. You know, anybody remember this? Yeah. Or I didn't have a cell phone actually until I was a sophomore in college. I remember having a rotary phone back in the day. I remember like the sparks would fly when you would like dial numbers. And I couldn't stand it when people had more than one zero in their number. Cause like stick your finger in and your finger would come out and then you have to start over. And Pastor Faye was talking to me about party line. I mean, I had a party line. Or the neighbor would be like, excuse me, can you get off? I need to make a phone call, right? I mean, it's just unreal how fast things have changed, right? This little perspective, too. You know when the first iPhone came out? 2007. That's like just a little over 10 years ago. It feels like they've been with us forever, right? I mean, computers used to take up whole city blocks. And now you're carrying a supercomputer in your pocket. And the leaps that we're seeing in technology now are bigger and bigger, and they're happening faster and faster. And so much of the technology now is focused on making the world more available to us, right? Making the world more accessible to us. But at the same time, it's also making us more accessible and more available to the world. And this carries with it all sorts of blessings, but it also creates some unique challenges, particularly for our relationships with one another. Unique challenges that nobody's ever had to experience before. Nobody's had to face these challenges before. So I think it's an important conversation for us to have. Can you dig it? Get off your phone. Let me ask you again. Right? Now we're going to cover a whole lot of ground in the scriptures, all right? I've noticed some larger themes. Sometimes it's helpful to read the Bible from like a bird's eye view. You step back and you look at it like this. And I've noticed some larger themes that kind of carry on throughout it. So we're going to jump around a bit in the first part of the scriptures. And we're going to start where this whole series started, in Genesis chapter 1, all right? All the way in the beginning. It's an easy book to find. It's all the way to the left, all right? Genesis chapter 1. We're going to start there. the creation story that we find. In the creation story, without a doubt, human beings are the pinnacle of God's creation. Right? Turn to your neighbor and say, you're a piece of work. You can do that. I mean, seriously, you don't have to say it like that. You know? Like, we are the climax of the creation story in Genesis chapter 1. If you read it carefully, every other living thing in Genesis 1 is actually produced by creation itself. Right? The birds in the air, the fish are actually created by the water. It's interesting. The earth is actually what creates the land animals. Human beings are the only thing God uniquely and intentionally creates himself. And there is like this divine counsel that takes place in Genesis 1, right before God decides to create human beings. Let's read this together. Verse 26 of chapter 1. Then God said, let us make mankind in our image and our likeness so that they may rule over the fish in the sea and the birds in the sky, over the livestock and all the wild animals and over all the creatures that move along the ground. Verse 27. So God, say this with me, created. Say that word. So God, mankind in his own image. In the image of God, he, male and female, he. Thank you. The word for created here in this verse is different than the word that gets used all throughout the chapter. In the original language, in Hebrew, it's this word bara, and you have to say it like that because it's a big explosive word in the Jewish consciousness. It's this like a massive explosive creative power that only God has. It refers to something that God uniquely creates. Right? So it's this big, important word. Now, it gets repeated three times in a row when God is creating human beings. So it's almost like this picture of God taking this sort of like nuclear power, this bra, this creative power, and like three times just infusing human beings with this ability to create. Bra, bra, you have been given bra. Some of you are like, no, not me, right? So we're like, no, not them, right? But I mean, just stop and think about how, I mean, human beings are unbelievably creative. Like, whether it's your yard and the way you want to make sure it's edged just right, right? Maybe it's like the way you organize your sock drawer, which is just weird, right? I mean, we are unbelievably creative creatures. I mean, even the food that we eat. I mean, like, one of the first things you say when you sit down to a restaurant and they bring out the dish, that looks good. Who cares? You're going to eat it, right? We are unbelievably creative, and what God has given us this sort of supernatural power almost to shape the world. I mean, this is something that we see. What other species comes close to being able to do with creation what human beings are able to do with creation? I mean, it is just, it's nothing short of like Harry Potter, Hogwarts stuff. If you think about it, I mean, it's like, it's unreal. We take a computer chip, a tiny little computer chip, and we can pack that thing full of so much information. I don't even understand how that, what? Or now we're actually storing information in the air. It's the cloud, right? This is probably way, like, it's totally not accurate, but I just imagine like information zooming around our heads like all the time. I mean, it's amazing when you really step back and you like, you think about what human beings are able to do. It's just God-given ability. Now, Genesis chapter 1, the creation story kind of leaves it open-ended. They've got this bara, but what are they going to do with it? Dun, 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 right? And Genesis 1 is a part of a larger section that's often referred to as the prologue of the Bible. Prologue is the story that sets up the story, right? And so the prologue of Genesis 1, it runs from chapter 1 all the way to chapter 11. And it finishes with a pretty well-known story that many of us are probably familiar with, the Tower of Babel. Right, where the people are building this tower and they have one common language and God confuses their language. There's some interesting things happening in the text, though, that I think are helpful to the conversation we're having this morning. So let's look at this. Genesis chapter 11, verse 1. Now the whole world had one language and a common speech. As people moved eastward, they found a plain in Shinar and settled there. They said to each other, come, let's make bricks. Everybody say bricks. Bricks. Let's make bricks and bake them thoroughly. They used brick instead of stone and tar for mortar. Then they said, come, let us build ourselves a city with a tower that reaches to the heavens so that we may make a name for ourselves. Otherwise, we will be scattered over the face of the whole earth. There's so much going on in this text. This is a really interesting story. But one of the things this passage offers us is actually a critique on technology. These first human beings figure out how to make what? Bricks. Before that, they used stone. And stone, you could alter it a little bit, but mostly you had to like work with the shape. And if you watch a stone builder today, often they work with the natural shape of the stone. You can't really manipulate it too much, right? It is what it is. And so you can only build a handful of things. But now all of a sudden, they figured out how to make bricks. And you can make a brick any shape, any size that you want. So the possibilities are limitless here. It's a huge jump forward in technology. Right, which sounds like a really great thing. Not so fast. Because these human beings, they don't have noble intentions, right, with this new technology. They intend to build themselves a tower. And the language here suggests that it's what's called a ziggurat, which is really fun to say. But in the ancient world, this is like a tower that a king or an emperor would build, and it was supposed to like symbolize their greatness. Right? The taller the tower, the greater the king. It was a symbol of pride and self-sufficiency. And there's more going on here. The phrase that they say a couple of times, verse 3, they say, come, let us go. This is the exact same phrase God uses in the creation story when God decides to make human beings. What the author wants us to see is this is a showdown of wills. Right, the will of God and the will of these first human beings. These human beings mean to take this unbelievable power God has given them, this bara, and use it essentially to replace God, to build a tower to storm the heavens and to replace God as the ultimate authority. This brings us to a really interesting observation about technology. Seems like every leap forward in technology, what this technology tends to do is that it expands an already present human capability. So it takes something that we can already do and makes it easier for us to do. So we already could build things with rocks. Now we've got bricks. We can build better things with bricks, right? So it expands a capability. But the other thing it tends to do, there's always this sort of shadow side to it. Right, where it sort of expands an already a capability we already have, it also tends sometimes to accentuate a deficiency that we have. Right, there's a movement in the other way as well. So take a car. Right, a car is great. We can already travel. We can walk. But with a car, we can do what? We can go faster. We can go farther. But then what happens when you get too many cars? You wouldn't know anything about that living in Lexington. I mean, sometimes you can have so much traffic where it's actually, you could walk faster, right, when you're trying to get somewhere. So there often tends to be this sort of positive thing, this really great thing that happens, but then there also tends to be this sort of negative side to it. I'm not standing up here saying that technology's bad. Hear me when I say that. Yeah. I'm not saying we need to go, like, move out to the middle of nowhere, you know, like, make our own clothes and build our own houses. That sounds kind of cool, right, maybe for, like, a weekend. I like technology. I mean, give it up for air conditioning. Yeah, I like air conditioning. AC's great. I don't miss paper maps. Remember those? I'm trying to fold them. It's like make you so angry, right? I don't have to have, like, technology's wonderful. But I think there's a needed conversation. With every leap forward, there tends to be a few steps we take back too, right? It creates some unique challenges. Let's keep going in the story. You still out there? What I want to do now is jump ahead to the next book in the story. So it's Genesis, then Exodus, right? The book of Exodus is where we are introduced for the first time to the nation of Israel. At the end of Genesis, the people of Israel becoming, they're a large family, right? They're this big, really dysfunctional family that many of us could relate to, right? And at the end of Genesis, they move to Egypt in order to avoid a famine. But while they're in Egypt, they explode. I mean, they become this huge nation. Massive there in Egypt. Well, a new Pharaoh comes into power who feels sort of threatened by these Israelites because they're getting too big too fast. And so what he essentially does is he turns them into slave labor, and he has them build some of these really great cities all throughout the empire. But notice what this Pharaoh has them doing. You ready? Exodus chapter 1, verse 14. It says, they, speaking of the Egyptians, made their lives bitter with harsh labor in brick and mortar. What are the Israelites making in Egypt? Bricks, bricks, bricks. This is their job when they're in Egypt. And if you keep reading throughout the story, this is what they do every single day. They wake up, they make bricks. There was no weekend in the ancient world. There was no day off. Every day was Monday. You woke up and you did the same thing you did the day before. You made bricks. And you also had a quota. There was a number of bricks you had to make each day. And if you didn't make them, there was trouble. And so again, so much of your identity, so much of your security as a person, as a human, was tied up in how many bricks did you make today? Did you keep up with the quota? Are you accomplishing everything there is for you to accomplish? Did you make your bricks? Every day you did the same thing. You were tied to the machine. I would argue we still carry bricks today. Now, they may only be 4.7 inches long, but they're just as heavy. Wouldn't you agree? Every day, tied to the machine. Every day, we do the same thing over and over and over again. Now, I'm not up here saying that I think cell phones are from the devil, that they're evil, right? You hear me? No, phones are great. But I feel like we've got to have an honest conversation about our relationships with our phones and the way that our phones can sometimes negatively impact the relationships that we have with one another. You with me? You still out there? This is funny. You know, one of the things I'm observing, I'm calling this cellular slavery. I mean, just think about some of the language we use, even with our phone. You can tether the device, right? You can tether it to your car. You can tether it to your Bluetooth speaker. You can tether it to your watch, right? You can tether your phone. But I wonder often if we aren't the ones tethered to our phones. It's like, what do you do when you leave it at home on accident? Where is it? Where's my phone? It's like, do you lose it when you lose it? I mean, seriously, like, it's funny. That's a new feeling. That's a new feeling in human history. Can you believe that there was a day when you didn't do that? Like, there was a day, I remember when I was 16 years old, I dated this girl who lived like 2 hours away. Long story, dumb. But I remember driving to go visit her, and I didn't have a phone on me. I didn't own a phone at the time. And I had zero anxiety about it. My parents had zero anxiety about it. It's like, now, what do we think? Like, where's your phone? Do you have your phone? Like, we don't know how to function without it, right? I mean, when you lose it, do you lose it? I was reading some studies this past week. There's all sorts of new research on this, about the way this is sort of impacting us, influencing us, because it's brand new. Right? This is a new challenge for human beings. And all these studies, several of them said this, that for the majority of Americans, their phone is the first thing they look at when they wake up in the morning. The very first thing they look at, and it's the last thing they look at before they go to bed. The average American now spends 7.5 hours a day looking at a screen. 7.5 hours. You're like, there's no way. Role play. Go back through your day. How much of it is spent looking at your phone, looking at a computer screen? We're glued in. Right? We're tied to the machine. Always. Constantly. Plugged in. I mean, think about how this negatively impacts our relationships. Let's just think about that for a bit. Again, is it all bad? No. But there's a shadow side to this, right? There's an unhealthy side. Like, let's say you're out to lunch with somebody you hadn't seen for a while, right? And they you've been there before. They sit down across from you and they pull out their phone and they put it right next to them face up. How does that make you feel? Well, how does it make you feel? Not very important, right? And then what happens when the phone rings or buzzes? Then it gets like really weird. It's like, what are they going to do? Like looking at it, like there's this ranking going on, right? Who's more important? Is this more important or is that more important? Like, what are you going to do, right? And then I love this. When I look at it and you go, I'm not going to get it. It's like, gee, thanks, right? Appreciate your graciousness, you big bad thing, you, right? I mean, it's like, it's the way it can disconnect us from each other. So on the one hand, my phone has this unbelievable ability to connect me with somebody on the other side of the world. I was in Israel in January. One of the coolest things, I could talk to my kids at night. You know, that was amazing. I was in Israel, other side of the world. Could see my children's faces. That's unbelievable. So it has this ability to sort of connect us with people on the other side of the world. But here's the other thing. It has this ability to also disconnect us from the people on the other side of the table. You've seen it before. You've been out to dinner. Whole family of people. They're sitting at the same table, but they're not there together. Their faces are blue. Everybody's looking at their phone, right? So we can be connected, but have no connection. Am I talking to anybody right now? Am I speaking to you? It's funny, Sigma did a study. This was troubling for me. So only half of Americans reported having at least one meaningful in-person social interaction on a daily basis. One. Just one. Meaningful. Human to human. In-person meaningful conversation on a daily basis. I mean, so much of our technology, we call it convenient if it means I don't have to talk to anybody. Thought about that? It's all automated. It's like, man, I can go to the grocery store. I can go through the self-checkout line, which is not faster in any way. So you go to the self-checkout line, the light's going to blink, and you're going to look like an idiot, and I got to come fix it, and all kinds of, it takes longer, but I don't have to actually look anybody in the face. Then I can go home, and I can order a pizza on the computer. They bring it to my house. I mean, it's like everything is about distancing ourselves from one another. And that was troubling me. Now, less than half of Americans report having one meaningful in-person conversation on a daily basis. And one of the things I think the phone is doing is it's keeping us from being like ever just fully present in the moment, like just actually being there. I mean, here's me being brutally honest with you, right? I hope I'll do this and then you can do it too. That's how this works, right? It's like I notice I have this impulse to like pull it out whenever I feel like a lull. Like whenever there's like some empty space, whenever there's this time where I'm bored, the first thing I do is I pull out my phone, right? Pull it out. You're in the doctor's office and you got to wait 10 minutes. It's like you feel the big empty, right? It's like the big empty. I'm just sitting here. What do I do? You know, it's like I used to go look at the fish. I used to look around the room and notice the weird wallpaper. Like, we used to actually be able to be in the moment. We used to actually kind of feel those things and, like, reflect on life. When I was a kid, we went on a road trip. We drove from Indiana. We went all the way out west to, like, Montana. We were hours in the car. I don't know how I even survived that. It's like, what did I do when I didn't have a screen to look at? I used my imagination. You know, I had to think about things. I had to take care. What's really weird to me is I'm noticing in people, there's this lack of emotional resiliency. We don't know what to do when we feel bad and we don't have something to stimulate us. You know, sometimes you just need to feel bad. Sometimes you just need to be bored and figured it out. Or maybe that empty space is a great time to do some reflection. How's your soul? We don't want to think about that stuff. And so we just reach for it. Or here's where I get frustrated myself is when I find myself being annoyed by the real world because of what I'm doing on my phone. Parents out there, it's like your kid's trying to get your attention. You're like, will you just leave me alone? I'm trying to put the picture I just took of you up on Facebook so everybody can see how awesome you are. It's like, just back off, right? I mean, it's ridiculous. I mean, am I really the only one? I mean, make some noise, or am I just getting you that good? Is that what it is? Right? It pulls us. It keeps us. Sometimes we just got to be there. We just got to be in the moment. Put the camera down. You don't need the picture. You don't need the video. You just need to be in it. Just experience it. Just be there. Feel it. Truth is, we could do this all day long, couldn't we? You get the point. You're with me. So the question is, then, how do we begin to put some boundaries down, right? How do we begin to develop some rumble strips to help us with this? All I want to do is I want to go back to those three rules of the road we came up with a couple weeks ago, right? Three rules of the road when it comes to boundaries and rumble strips in our relationships. They came out of that Galatians 6 passage, which is just a fascinating passage. I'm going to read it to you again to make sure we're all on the same page. I'm not just making this stuff up, right? This is coming to us from the scriptures. Galatians chapter 6, speaking to a group of people just like you and me. Brothers and sisters, if someone was caught in a sin, you who live by the Spirit should restore that person gently. But watch who? Yourselves, or you also may be tempted. Carry each other's burdens, and in this way you fulfill the law of Christ. If anyone thinks they are something when they are not, they deceive who? Themselves. Each one should test their own actions. Then they can take pride in themselves alone without comparing themselves to someone else. For each one should carry their own load. Such a fascinating passage. The first rule of the road we pulled out of this, though, was look both ways. Right? How often when there's a conflict in our lives, the first thing we look at is the external causes of that conflict. We look on the other side of the road. But instead, what this passage seems to be doing is calling us to self-awareness. Check yourself first. Right? Look on your side of the road. And so for a lot of us, here's what it looks like with our phone. A lot of us have jobs nowadays, right, where we are responsible for a lot of people. We have people that report to us, people who need us, and so we need to be available, right? We need to be available. We need to be on our phones. Or some of us have responsibilities. We're parents, and our kids may need us. Like, we have to be connected in some way, shape, or form. Or think about Pastor Faye, congregational care. I mean, Pastor Faye, her primary job is to be there for people when they're in the midst of a crisis. And so one of the challenges you have is you got to be sort of connected to your phone. That's good. That's true. And some of us, you know, our work, the majority of the work that we do is online, right? It's sort of creating this thing out there. It's big and it's beautiful. That's wonderful. But I think one of the things we have to do is we've got to be brutally honest with ourselves about how much of our time online with our phone is spent actually doing that, and how much of it is spent doing absolutely mindless stuff. I can't tell you how many times I get sucked into those like slideshow lists. You know what I'm talking about? It's like the strangest shaped pools, right? It's like the top 10 celebrity houses. Like, you know, like I just get sucked into these things. And like the other day I spent 20 minutes with this slideshow about the deepest man-made hole ever dug. It's a borehole in Russia, in case you wanted to know, right? It took me 20 minutes before I realized, why am I reading this, you know? Like, how much of our time is spent doing those good things? How much of it is spent just checking out? Right? You got to be honest about that. At the same time, I think this is an important question for our culture, especially with the rise of social media, which, again, I don't think is bad. But we've got to ask this question. Why do we feel this need to be seen, to be noticed? Like, why does so much of our worth come from that sort of stuff now? Right? How many likes did we get? Don't think I'm not going to go online and look at Facebook page and see how many times y'all shared the message from today. I'm going to look at that. I mean, we just sort of insecurity, right? Or for a lot of us, you know, there's sort of this addiction we have to being needed. In fact, research has shown that your phone, your brain reacts to your phone the same way your brain reacts to things like alcohol or nicotine or gambling. Your brain actually releases dopamine. So that's why it feels good when you get the text, when you get the like, it feels good. Your brain's actually releasing dopamine. It's this really addictive chemical in your brain. So it's like, oh, I feel good. Let's get another one. We get addicted to this. For a lot of us, maybe it's not Facebook, but it's our inbox. Like we want to be needed. And you might complain about your inbox and how many emails you have, but how would you feel on Monday if you woke up and it was empty? Why isn't anybody emailing me, right? So we're addicted to this sort of, we've got to be honest, where does that come from? Where is that coming from? Get quiet in the doctor's office when you're waiting for 10 minutes. And ask that, why? Why do I feel this need to be seen, noticed, needed? Where is that coming from, right? Look both ways. Second rule of the road. We've got to stay in our lane. One of the things this Galatian passage does is it encourages us, on the one hand, to help each other out with our burdens, right? So when life gets heavy, when these unexpected things happen, these challenges that come our way, be there for each other. But then it balances that out by telling us each one should be responsible, though, for their own load. Take responsibility for your life. And things like relationships get messy when we blur those lines, right? Where I expect you to take responsibility for my life and my happiness and my emotional well-being and my choices, right? Or I expect, you know, or I assume responsibility for yours. That's when things get really complicated in our relationships. Well, technology just makes this even harder, doesn't it? Because right now you are so available to so many people all the time now. Like they can call you, they can email you, they can send you a text message, they can reach out to you on Facebook, right? I mean, we are so available now in so many ways. Like it used to be hard to get a hold of people. You had to go to their house. Think about that now. So weird how it's like when the doorbell rings, everybody just, get under the table, don't move. Maybe they don't know we're here, right? It's like back in the day, like if you wanted to go like talk to somebody, you had to, you know, get a pigeon and like write a note and like send it to them, right? But it was hard to get, now it's not. You just fire off an email, you just fire off a text. And because we're so available, people have this expectation that you're going to respond immediately. It's like, I know they got their phone on them. Or else why aren't they getting back to me, right? So this makes this tricky. So in light of this, two thoughts in light of this, all right? One, I hope this feels as good for you as it does for me, right? On one hand, it feels good. The other hand, it makes my palms sweaty. So I don't know where I'm going with this. You don't have to be available to everybody at the same level. You don't have to be as available to everybody. You don't. Does that feel good to hear that? But then does it make your palms kind of sweaty? It's like Jesus. Jesus wasn't like this. It's one of my favorite. I love this about Jesus. So we kind of miss this, but if you read through the Gospels, it suggests that there was maybe like around 120 people that sort of followed him around, right? Regularly, that went with him everywhere he went. So about 120 people who were kind of into what he was doing, right? And then he had, what, 12 disciples? Right? People that he spent a whole lot of time with and he really poured into. But then within that 12, you know what he had? He had three. Who were they? Anybody know? Yep, you're right. Peter, James, and John, right? There are three that he was especially close to. Like, there's this moment in the Gospels. I think this is funny, right? I think this is really funny. Moment in the Gospels, it's like this big moment where he, in front of the 120 and in front of the 12, he picks the three and he takes them to the top of this mountain. And in this mountain, they have this unbelievable experience, right? Jesus is transfigured. His clothes shine like lightning. They hear the voice of God. They actually see Jesus talking with Moses and Elijah, right? It's just like, oh my, oh. What I love, though, is when they come back down from the mountain, Jesus doesn't feel the need to explain himself to anybody. You got to wonder what they're thinking. Why'd he pick them? Why'd he take me? Right? You know, Jesus doesn't walk up to anybody and go, hey, you know, I know you probably wanted to come, but like, listen, we spent a lot of time together last week, so I'm just going to spread it out, right? Just spread it out. No. He's a gangster. Right? It's like, he doesn't feel the need to explain to nobody. To nobody. Let me just say that again. You don't have to be available to everybody on the same level. You don't. I don't like giving my cell phone out to everybody. Because, to be honest, you don't need to call me. Some of y'all don't. You can email me, right? You can call me here at the church. It's like, we got to really think through that. Who needs that kind of access? Who really needs that kind of access to you? Not everybody. Not everybody. Second thing I think we got to think of in light of this. It's not every emergency is an emergency. Y'all got that friend, right? Every email's marked urgent. It's like, come on. Or you got the friend that like texts, when they text you, it's always in capital letters. It's like, how about, stop yelling at me, right? That's the equivalent of yelling in text messaging. But here's what we got to think through. For some people, what they think is a crisis or an emergency is really just a lack of responsibility on their part. They waited too long. They weren't prepared. They didn't handle their stuff, and now who do they expect to pay for it? You. Right? So this is hard. This is the hard part. We have to really step back and ask, am I enabling somebody by always being available for them, always responding to their text messages, to their phone calls, to their emails, right? What some people call a crisis, an emergency, really isn't. It probably can wait. They've been waiting. Now all of a sudden they decide not to. Are you with me? Yes? That makes sense. Ready to keep talking about it? We good? We got to stay in our lane, right? Stay in our lane. Last one. We got to make some noise, right? Rumble strips work because they're loud. Rumble strips work because they're obvious. Rumble strips work because they're tangible. right? And what this looks like for me is we got to begin to put some like very real rhythms into our life with technology, right? It's interesting when God rescues the Israelites out of Egypt, right? So he delivers them from bondage, from slavery. He brings them into the wilderness and he gives them instruction on how he wants them to live now. Now that they're free, here's how I want you to live. We call the Ten Commandments. And what these commandments are really about is, okay, you got your freedom, but you have no idea what to do with it, do you? Because you've been a slave your whole life. So how do you actually live life to the fullest with this slave, with this new freedom? And one of the laws was about practicing Sabbath. And I don't think we understand how like revolutionary this was for its day. Back in the day, there were no weekends. People worked every day. Every day. But the people of God have always actually experienced persecution for this. Like the early Christians, one of the things they were persecuted for, they were those weirdos that took a day off. Right? But what Sabbath was about, if you read through it, Sabbath was about reminding the people of the fact that they weren't slaves anymore. Reminding the people that their identity didn't come from how many bricks they produced. That their worth and their value and their meaning didn't come from how seen they were, from how noticed they were, from how needed they were, from how high up on the social ladder they were. No, your worth and your value and your identity is something you already have. You're loved by God. Rest in that. Rest in that. So what's Sabbath look like with our life and technology? Just some simple questions for you. When do you turn it off? When do you close the computer? When are you not available? You got a day like that? Well, for me, it's not always about turning it off. I'm in a similar place as Faye. You never know when a crisis comes, right? When an emergency comes. And so I know Saturdays are like my day off. Saturdays are my day with my kids. The other days can kind of flex. You get a day here or there. But I know like Saturdays, I'm not available, right? And so if I get an email or a phone call or something, I'll look at it, just make sure it's not a crisis, but I don't always reply. You can wait. More than likely, you can wait till Monday, right? It's like, when aren't you available? Here's one. Where do you put it? Like, where do you put this? It's like, one of my biggest fears is my kids are going to look back on their childhood, and when I think about dad, you know what they're going to see? That's what I'm going to look like to them. I've always had my phone with me. And so one of the things I've been trying, I've only been doing it for a week, and it's actually been kind of nice, is I'm leaving this upstairs in my closet, in our bedroom. I put it in there. It's not always on me. Now, I can go up there and check it if I need to, but I've got to walk up the stairs to do it. And so one of the things I noticed, my kids aren't always seeing me with my phone now. I think it's a healthy thing. Do you agree? Who do you need to be available to? Who do you really need to be available to? Maybe it's some people you don't need to be available to. Right? I mean, think through some of these things, right? Or maybe there's just some special time. I love this. People get together for a dinner, right? And what they'll do is they'll pull out a basket and everybody's got to put their phone in the basket and they put it in the closet. And it's like, for this time right now, we're just here, you and me. We're going to be together, right? I feel like these are some healthy practices, some things that we need to, some ways we can practice Sabbath, right? We can remind ourselves that our worth and our value doesn't come from our bricks, doesn't come from being tied to the machine or what we're able to accomplish or produce or who we are compared to everybody else. Our worth and our value comes from the fact that we're loved by God. We're loved by God.